Remember Me, Disc 12.
I can do this. I can. As I walk into Simon Johnson's room, my back is ramrod stiff and my smile rigid. Lexi, Simon beams. Good to see you. Come and take a seat. Everyone else looks totally at ease. Four directors are clustered around a small table in comfortable leather chairs. Cups of coffee are on the go. A thin, greying man whom I recognise as David Albright is talking to the man on his left about a villa in Provence.
So, your memory is recovered.
Simon hands me a cup of coffee.
Tremendous news, Lexi.
Yes, it's great.
We're just going through the implications of Juno 7.
He nods at the papers spread over the table.
This is very good timing, because I knew you had some strong views about the amalgamation of departments. You know everyone here?
He pulls out a chair, but I don't sit down. Actually, my hands are damp and I curl them round the folder. Actually, I wanted to speak to you, all of you, about something else. David Albright looks up with a frown.
What?
Flooring. Simon winces. Someone else mutters, for God's sake.
Lexi. Simon's voice is tight. We've discussed this before. We've moved on. We're no longer dealing in flooring.
But I've done a deal. That's what I want to talk about. I take a deep breath. I've always felt the archive prints that Della owns are one of its biggest assets. For several months, I've been trying to find a way to harness these assets. Now I have a deal in place with a company which would like to use one of our old designs. It'll raise Della's profile. It'll turn the department around. I can't help sounding exhilarated. I know I can motivate my department. This can be the beginning of something big and exciting. All we need is another chance. Just one more chance. I stop breathlessly and survey the faces. I can see it at once. I've made precisely no impact whatsoever. Sir David has the same impatient frown on his face. Simon looks murderous. One guy is checking his BlackBerry.
I thought the decision on flooring had been made,
says Sir David Albright testily to Simon.
Why are we raising it again?
It has been decided, Sir David,
he says hurriedly.
Lexi, I don't know what you're doing.
I'm doing business, I retort with a clench of frustration.
Young lady, Sir David says, business is forward-looking. Della is a new millennium high-tech company. We have to move with the times, not cling on to the old.
I'm not clinging. I try not to yell. The old Della prints are fabulous. It's a crime not to use them.
Is this to do with your husband? Simon says, as though he suddenly understands. Lexi's husband is a property developer,
he explains to the others, then turns back to me.
Lexi, with all due respect, you're not going to save your department by carpeting a couple of show flats.
One of the men laughs, and I feel a knife of fury. Carpeting a couple of show flats? Is that all they think I'm capable of? Once they hear what this deal is, they'll... I'm drawing myself up, ready to tell them, ready to blow them away. I can feel a bubbling of triumph mixed with a bit of venom. Maybe John's right. Maybe I am a bit of a cobra. If you really want to know... I begin, eyes blazing. And then all of a sudden I change my mind. I halt mid-sentence, thinking furiously. I can feel myself retreating, fangs going back in, biding my time. So, you've really made your decision? I say in a different, more resigned voice.
We made our decision a long time ago, says Simon. As you well know.
Right. I sink as though in massive disappointment and chew at one of my nails. Then I perk up as though an idea's just hit me.
Well, if you're not interested, maybe I could buy the copyright of the designs so I can license them as a private venture.
Jesus Christ, mutters Sir David. Lexi, please don't waste your time and money, says Simon. You have a position here. You have prospects. There's no need for this kind of gesture.
I want to, I say stubbornly. I really believe in Della Carpets, but I need it soon for my deal. I can see the directors exchanging glances.
She had a bump to the head in a car crash,
Simon murmurs to the guy I don't recognize.
She hasn't been right since. You have to feel sorry for her, really.
Let's just sort it out,
Sir David Albright waves an impatient hand.
I agree.
Simon heads to his desk, lifts his phone and punches in a number.
Ken? Simon Johnson here. One of our employees will be coming to see you about the copyright of some old Della carpet design. We're closing down the department, as you know, but she's got some idea of licensing it.
He listens for a moment.
Yes, I know. No, she's not a company, just a single operator. Work out a nominal fee and the paperwork, could you? Thanks, Ken.
He puts the phone down and scribbles a name and number on a piece of paper.
Ken Allison, our company lawyer. Call him to make an appointment.
Thanks. I nod and pocket the paper.
And Lexi.
Simon pauses.
I know we talked about a 3-month leave, but I think that your employment here should be terminated.
Fine. I nod. I understand. Goodbye. And thanks. I turn on my heel and walk out. As I open the door, I can hear Simon saying,
It's a terrific shame. That girl had such potential. Somehow I get out of the room without skipping.
Fee is waiting for me as I step out of the lift at the 3rd floor and raises her eyebrows.
Well?
Didn't work, I murmur as we head to the main flooring office, but it's not all over.
There she is.
Byron heads out of his office as I pass by.
The miracle recovery girl.
Shut up, I say over my shoulder.
So, are we really supposed to believe that you've recovered your memory?
His sarcastic drawl follows me.
You're really going to snap back into it?
I turn and regard him with a blank, perplexed gaze.
Who's he?
I say at last to Fee, who snorts with laughter.
Very funny,
snaps Byron, whose cheeks have coloured.
But if you think...
Oh, leave it out, Byron, I say wearily. You can have my fucking job. I've arrived at the door to the main office and clap my hands to get everyone's attention.
Hi, I say as everyone looks up. I just wanted to let you know... I'm not cured. I haven't got my memory back. That was a lie. I tried to pull off a massive bluff to try to save this department, but I failed. I'm really sorry.
As everyone watches, agog, I take a few steps into the office, looking around at the desks, the wall charts, the computers. They'll all be pulled down and disposed of, sold or chucked into skips. This whole little world will be over.
I did everything I could, but...
I exhale sharply. Anyway, the other news is I've been fired. So, Byron, over to you. I register the jolt of shock on Byron's face and can't help a half smile. And to all of you who hated me or thought I was a total hard-as-nails bitch, I swivel around. Taking in all the silent faces. I'm sorry. I know I didn't get it right, but I did my best. Cheers and good luck, everyone.
I lift a hand. Thanks, Lexi, says Melanie awkwardly. Thanks for trying, anyway.
Yeah, thanks, chimes in Claire, whose eyes have been like saucers through my speech.
To my astonishment, someone starts clapping, and suddenly the whole room is applauding.
Stop it!
My eyes start stinging and I blink hard. You idiots! I didn't do anything! I failed! I glance at Fee, and she's clapping hardest of all. Anyway, I try to keep my composure. As I say, I've been fired, so I'll be going to the pub immediately to get pissed. There's a laugh around the room. I know it's only 11 o'clock, but anyone care to join me?
By 3 o'clock, my bar bill is over 300 quid. Most of the flooring employees have drifted back to the office, including a fractious Byron, who has been in and out of the pub demanding that everyone return for the last 4 hours. It was one of the best parties I've ever been to. When I produced my platinum Amex, the pub people whacked up the music for us and provided hot nibbles, and Fee gave a speech. Amy did a karaoke version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, then got chucked out by the bar staff, who suddenly realised she was underage. I told her to go back to the office and I'd see her there, but I think she's gone to Topshop. And then two girls I barely know did a fantastic sketch of Simon Johnson and Sir David Albright meeting on a blind date, which apparently they did at Christmas, only of course I don't remember it. Everyone had a great time. In fact, the only one who didn't get totally pissed was me. I couldn't, because I have a meeting with Ken Allison at 4:30. So, Fee lifts her drink. To us. She clinks glasses with me, Debs and Carolyn. It's just the four of us sitting round a table now, like the old days.
To being unemployed, Debs says morosely, picking a bit of party popper out of her hair. Not that we blame you, Lexi, she adds hastily.
I take a swig of wine, then lean forward. Okay, you guys, I have something to tell you, but you can't let on to anyone.
What?
Carolyn is bright-eyed.
Are you pregnant?
No, you dope. I lower my voice. I've done a deal. That's what I was trying to tell Simon Johnson about. This company wants to use one of our old retro carpet designs, like a special high-profile limited edition. They'll use the Della name, we'll get huge PR. It'll be amazing. The details are all sorted out. I just need to finalise the contract.
That's great, Lexi, says Debs, looking uncertain. But how can you do it now you're fired?
The directors are letting me licence the old designs as an independent operator. For a song. They're so short-sighted. I pick up a samosa, then put it down again, too excited to eat. I mean, this could just be the start. There's so much archive material. If it grows, we could expand, employ some more of the old team, turn ourselves into a company.
I can't believe they weren't interested.
Fee shakes her head incredulously.
They've totally written off carpets and flooring. All they care about is bloody home entertainment systems.
But that's good. It means they're going to let me license all the designs for practically nothing. Then all the profits will come to me. And whoever works with me. I look from face to face, waiting for the message to hit home.
Us, says Debs, her face suddenly glowing. You want us to work with you?
If you're interested, I say a little awkward. I mean, think about it first. It's just an idea.
I'm in, says Fee firmly. She opens a packet of crisps and crunches a handful into her mouth. But Lexi, I still don't understand what happened up there. Didn't they get excited when you told them who the deal was with? Are they crazy?
They didn't even ask who it was with. I shrug. They assumed it was one of Eric's projects.
You're not going to save your department by carpeting a couple of show flats?
I imitate Simon Johnson's patronising voice.
So, who is it?
Asks Debs.
Who's the company?
I glance at Fee, and can't help a tiny smile as I say, Porsche.
20. So that's it. I am the official licensor of Della Carpet Designs. I had a meeting with a lawyer yesterday, and another one this morning. Everything's signed, and the bank draft has gone through. Tomorrow I meet with Jeremy Northpool again, and we sign the contract for the Porsche deal. As I arrive home, I'm still powered up by adrenaline. I need to call all the girls, fill them in on developments. Then I need to think where we're going to base ourselves.
We need an office, somewhere cheap and convenient. Maybe Balham.
We could have fairy lights in the office, I think in sudden glee. Why not? It's our office. And a proper makeup mirror in the loos, and music playing while we work.
There are voices coming from Eric's office as I walk into the flat. Eric must have arrived home from Manchester while I was with the lawyer. I peep round the open door to see a room full of his senior staff grouped around the coffee table with an empty cafetiere at the centre. Clive is there, and the head of HR, Penny, and some guy called Stephen, whose role I've never been able to work out.
Hi,
I smile at Eric.
Good trip.
Excellent.
He nods, then gives a puzzled frown.
Shouldn't you be at work?
I'll explain that later.
I look around the faces, feeling generous after my successful morning.
Can I bring you all some more coffee?
Jana will do it, darling,
says Eric reprovingly.
It's okay. I'm not busy.
I head into the kitchen, humming as I make a fresh pot, sending quick texts to Fee, Carolyn and Debs to let them know all went well. We'll have a meeting this evening and talk everything through. I've already had an email from Carolyn this morning saying how excited she is and listing a load of new ideas and possible contacts for more exclusive deals. And Debs is gagging to take on PR. We're going to make a good team. I know we are.
I head back to Eric's office with a full pot and discreetly start pouring it out while listening to the discussion.
Penny is holding a list of names, with figures scribbled in pencil at the side.
I'm afraid I don't think Sally Hedge deserves a pay rise or a bonus,
she's saying as I pour her a cup of coffee.
She's very average. Thanks, Lexi.
I like Sally, I say. You know her mum's been ill recently.
Really?
Penny makes a face as though to say, so what?
Lexi made friends with all the secretaries and junior staff when she came into the office.
Eric gives a little laugh.
She's very good at that kind of thing.
It's not a kind of thing, I retort, a little rankled by his tone. I just got talking to her. She's really interesting. You know, she nearly made the British gymnastics squad for the Commonwealth Games. She can do a front somersault on the beam. Everyone looks at me blankly for a second.
Anyway,
Penny turns back to her paper.
We've agreed no bonus or pay rise this time, but perhaps a review after Christmas. Moving on, Damien Greenslade.
I know this isn't my business, but I can't bear it. I can just imagine Sally waiting for the news of the bonuses. I can just imagine her thud of disappointment.
Excuse me?
I dump the coffee pot on a handy shelf and Penny stops talking in surprise.
I'm sorry, can I just say something? The thing is, a bonus may not be much to the company. It's peanuts to the bottom line. But it's huge to Sally Hedge. Do any of you remember what it was like to be young and poor and struggling?
I look around at Eric's managers, all dressed in smart grown-up clothes with their smart grown-up accessories. Because I do.
Lexi, we know you're a tender-hearted soul. Stephen rolls his eyes. But what are you saying? We should all be poor.
I'm not saying you have to be poor. I try to control my impatience. I'm saying you have to remember what it's like being at the bottom of the ladder. It's a lifetime away for all of you. I sweep my hand round the room. But that was me, and it feels like it was about 6 weeks ago. I was that girl. No money, hoping for a bonus, wondering if I'd ever get a break, standing in the pouring rain. Suddenly I realise I'm getting a bit carried away. Anyway, I can tell you, if you give it to her, she really will appreciate it. There's a pause. I glance at Eric, and he has a fixed, livid smile on his face.
Right.
Penny raises her eyebrows.
Well, we'll come back to Sally Hedge.
She marks her paper. Thanks. I didn't mean to interrupt. Carry on. I pick up the coffee pot and try to creep out of the room silently, only stumbling briefly on a mulberry briefcase which someone's left on the floor. Maybe they'll give a bonus to Sally Hedge, or maybe they won't. But at least I said my bit. I pick up the paper and I'm just flicking through to see if there's an offices to rent section when Eric appears out of his office. Oh, hi, I say. Having a break?
Lexi, a word.
He walks me swiftly to my bedroom and closes the door, that horrible smile still on his face.
Please, don't ever interfere with my business again.
Oh, God, I thought he seemed pissed off. Eric, I'm sorry I interrupted the meeting, I say quickly, but I was only expressing an opinion.
I don't need any opinions.
But isn't it good to talk about things? I say in astonishment, even if we disagree. I mean, that's what keeps relationships alive, talking.
I don't agree.
His words are coming out like bullet fire. He's still got that smile on, like a mask, as if he has to hide how angry he really is. And all of a sudden, it's like a filter falls off my eyes. I don't know this man. I don't love him. I don't know what I'm doing here. Eric, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. I walk over to the window, trying to gather my thoughts. Then I turn round. Can I ask you a question, since we're talking? What do you really, genuinely think about us? Our marriage? Everything.
I think we're making good progress.
Eric nods, his mood instantly better, as though we've moved on to a new subject on the agenda.
We're becoming more intimate. You've started having flashbacks. You've learned everything from the marriage manual. I think it's all coming together. All good news.
He sounds so businesslike. Like he might suddenly produce a PowerPoint presentation with a graph going up to show how happy we are. How can he believe that when he's not interested in what I think, or any of my ideas, or who I really am? Eric, I'm sorry. I heave a deep sigh and slump down on a suede chair. But I don't agree. I don't think we are becoming more intimate, not really. And I have something to confess. I invented the flashback. Eric stares at me in shock.
You invented it? Why?
Because it was that or the whipped cream mountain. I suppose I just really wanted it to be true. I improvise vaguely. But the truth is, I've remembered nothing this whole time. You're still just a guy I met a few weeks ago. Eric sits down heavily on the bed and we lapse into silence. I pick up a black and white photograph of me and Eric at our wedding. We're toasting each other and smiling and outwardly blissful. But now I look more carefully. I can see the strain in my eyes. I wonder how long I was happy for. I wonder when it hit me I'd made a mistake. Eric, let's face it, it's not working out. I sigh as I replace the picture. Not for either of us. I'm with a man I don't know. You're with a woman who remembers nothing.
That doesn't matter. We're building a new marriage, starting again.
He's sweeping his hands around for emphasis. Any minute now he's going to say we're enjoying
marriage-style living.
We're not. I shake my head. And I can't do it anymore.
You can, darling.
Eric switches instantly into concerned husband of deranged invalid mode.
Maybe you've been pushing yourself too hard. Take a rest.
I don't need a rest. I need to be myself. I get to my feet, my frustration bubbling to the surface. Eric, I'm not the girl you think you married. I don't know who I've been these last 3 years, but it hasn't been me. I like colour. I like mess. I flail my arms around. I like pasta. All this time I wasn't hungry for success. I was hungry. Eric looks totally bemused.
Darling, he says carefully, if it means that much to you, we can buy some pasta.
I'll tell Jana to order some. It's not about the pasta, I cry out. Eric, you don't understand. I've been acting for the last few weeks, and I can't do it anymore. I gesture at the massive screen. I'm not into all this high-tech stuff. I don't feel relaxed. To be honest, I'd rather live in a house.
A house?
Eric looks as horrified as if I've said I want to live with a pack of wolves and have their babies. This place is fantastic, Eric. I suddenly feel bad for slagging off his creation. It's stunning and I really admire it, but it's not me. I'm just not made for loft-style living. Ugh! I can't believe it! I actually did the sweeping parallel hands gesture.
I'm shocked, Lexi.
Eric looks truly poleaxed.
I had no idea you felt that way.
But the most important thing is you don't love me.
I meet his eye straight on.
Not me.
I do love you.
Eric seems to regain his confidence.
You know I do. You're talented and you're beautiful.
You don't think I'm beautiful.
Yes, I do.
He seems affronted. Of course I do.
You think my collagen job is beautiful. I correct him gently, shaking my head, and my tooth veneers and my hair dye. Eric is silenced. I can see him eyeing me up incredulously. I probably told him it was all natural. I think I should move out. I take a few steps away, focusing on the carpet. I'm sorry, but it's just too much of a strain.
I guess we rushed things,
Eric says at last.
Maybe a break would be a good idea. After a week or two, you'll see things differently. We can think again.
Yeah, I nod. Maybe. It feels weird packing up this room. This isn't my life. It's another girl's life. I'm stuffing the absolute minimum into a Gucci suitcase which I found in a cupboard. Some underwear, jeans, a few pairs of shoes. I don't feel I have any right to all the beige designer suits. Nor, to be honest, do I want them? As I'm finishing, I sense a presence in the room and look up to see Eric in the doorway.
I have to go out,
he says stiffly.
Will you be all right?
Yes, I'll be fine. I nod. I'll take a cab to Fee's house. She's coming home early from work. I zip up the suitcase, wincing at its sound of finality. Eric, thanks for having me. I know this has been hard for you too.
I care for you deeply. You must know that.
There's genuine pain in Eric's eyes, and I feel a stab of guilt. But you can't stay with people because of guilt, or because they can drive a speedboat. I stand up, rubbing my stiff back, and survey the massive, immaculate room. The designer, state-of-the-art bed, the built-in screen, the dressing room for all those millions of clothes. I'm sure I'll never live in such a luxurious place again in my life. I must be crazy. As my gaze sweeps over the bed, something crosses my mind. Eric, do I squeak in my sleep? I ask casually. Have you ever noticed?
Yes, you do.
He nods.
We went to a doctor about it. He suggested you douche your nasal passages with salt water before retiring and prescribed a nose clip.
He heads to a drawer, brings out a box, and produces a gross-looking plastic contraption.
Do you want to take it with you?
No, I manage after a pause. Thanks anyway. Okay, I'm making the right decision. Eric puts the nose clip down. He hesitates, then comes over and gives me an awkward hug. I feel like we're obeying instructions from the marriage manual. Separation. Parting embrace. Bye, Eric, I say against his expensive scented shirt. I'll see you. Ridiculously, I feel near tears. Not because of Eric, but because it's over. My whole amazing, perfect dream life. At last, he pulls away.
Bye, Lexi.
He strides out of the room, and a moment later, I know he's gone. An hour later, I really have finished packing. In the end, I couldn't resist stuffing another suitcase full of La Perla and Chanel makeup and body products, and a third full of coats. I mean, who else will want them? Not Eric. And I've kept my Louis Vuitton bag for old time's sake. Saying goodbye to Jana was pretty hard. I gave her a huge goodbye hug, and she muttered something in Italian while she patted my head. I think she kind of understood. And now it's just me. I drag my cases to the living room, then glance at my watch. There's still a few minutes till the taxi's due. I feel like I'm checking out of a posh boutique-style hotel. It's been a great place to stay, and the facilities were amazing. But it was never home. Even so, I can't help a massive pang as I step out onto the huge terrace for the very last time, shading my eyes against the afternoon sun. I can remember arriving here and thinking I'd landed in heaven. It seemed like a palace. Eric seemed like a Greek god. I can still conjure up that amazing lottery winner's euphoria. With a sigh, I turn on my heel and head back inside. I guess I didn't have the perfect life handed to me on a plate, after all. Which probably means I was never Gandhi. As I'm locking the terrace door, it occurs to me I should say goodbye to my pet. I flick on the screen and click onto Pet Corner. I summon up my kitten and watch it for a minute, patting a ball, cute and ageless forever. Bye, Arthur, I say. I know it's not real, but I can't help feeling sorry for it, trapped in its virtual world. Maybe I should say goodbye to Titan, too, just to be fair. I click on Titan, and at once a 6-foot spider appears on the screen, rearing up at me like some kind of monster. Jesus! In horror, I recoil backwards and, the next moment, hear a loud crash. I wheel round, still shaken, to see a mess of glass, earth and greenery on the floor.
Oh, great. Stunning work. I've knocked over one of those bloody posh plant things, orchids or whatever they are.
As I'm staring at the wreckage in dismay, a message flashes up on the screen, bright blue on green, over and over. Disruption. Disruption. This place is really trying to tell me something. Maybe it is pretty intelligent after all.
I'm sorry, I say aloud to the screen. I know I've disrupted things, but I'm going. You won't have to put up with me any more.
I fetch a broom from the kitchen, sweep up all the mess and dump it in the bin. Then I find a piece of paper and write Eric a note.
Dear Eric, I broke the orchid. I'm sorry. Also, I ripped the sofa. Please send me an invoice. Yours, Lexi.
The doorbell rings just as I'm signing, and I prop the page up against the new glass leopard.
Hi, I say into the entry phone. Can you possibly come up to the top floor?
I might need some help with my cases. God knows what Fee will say. I told her I was only taking a shoebox full of essentials. I head to the outside landing and listen to the lift coming up to the penthouse floor.
Hello, I begin as the doors start opening. I'm sorry, I've got quite a lot of...
And then my heart stops dead. It's not the taxi driver standing in front of me. It's John. He's wearing off-duty jeans and t-shirt. His dark hair is sticking up unevenly, and his face looks all crumpled as though he slept on it wrong. He's the opposite of Eric's immaculate Armani model groomedness.
Hi,
I say, my throat suddenly dry.
What?
His face is almost austere, his dark eyes as intense as ever. I'm suddenly reminded of the very first time I met him, down in the car park, when he kept studying me as if he couldn't believe I didn't remember him. Now I can understand why he looked so desperate when I told him about my marvellous husband Eric. I can understand a lot of things.
I called you at work,
he says.
But they said you were at home.
Yeah, I manage a nod. Some stuff has happened at work. I'm all twisted up inside. I can't meet his eyes. I don't know why he's here. I take a step away, staring at the floor, winding my hands round each other tightly, holding my breath.
I need to say something to you, Lexi.
John takes a deep breath and every muscle in my body tightens in apprehension.
I need to apologise. I shouldn't have pestered you. It was unfair.
I feel a jolt of shock. That's not what I was expecting.
I've thought about it a lot,
John continues rapidly.
I realise this has been an impossible time for you. I haven't helped, and you're right. You're right.
He pauses.
I'm not your lover. I'm a guy you just met.
He sounds so matter-of-fact, there's a sudden lump in my throat.
John, I didn't mean...
I know.
He lifts a hand, his voice gentler.
It's okay. I know what you meant. This has been hard enough for you.
He takes a step closer, his eyes searching for mine.
And what I want to say is, don't beat yourself up, Lexi. You're doing your best. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
My voice is clotted with unshed tears. Well... I'm trying.
Oh, God, I'm going to cry.
John seems to realise this and moves away as though to give me space.
How'd it go at work with the deal?
Good,
I nod.
Great. I'm really pleased for you.
He's nodding like this is the wind-up, like he's about to turn and leave. And he doesn't even know yet.
I'm leaving Eric. I blurted out like a release. I'm leaving right now. I've got my suitcases packed. The taxi's coming. I don't mean to look for John's reaction, but I can't help it. And I see it. The hope rushing into his face like sunshine, then out again.
I'm glad,
he says at last, carefully measured.
You probably need some time to think everything over. This is all still pretty new for you.
Uh-huh. John.
My voice is all thick. I don't even know what I want to say. Don't.
He shakes his head, somehow managing a wry smile.
We just missed our time.
It's not fair.
No.
Through the glass behind John, I suddenly see a black taxi down below, turning into the entrance. John follows my gaze, and I see a sudden bleakness in the cast of his cheekbone. But as he turns back, he's smiling again.
I'll help you down.
When the bags are all packed into the taxi and I've given the driver Fee's address, I stand opposite John, my chest tight, not knowing how to say goodbye. So,
he touches my hand briefly. Look after yourself.
I swallow. You too. With slightly stumbling legs, I get into the cab and pull the door to. But I can't yet bring myself to close it properly. I can't yet hear that horrible final clunk. John? I look up to where he's still standing. Were we really good together?
We were good.
His voice is so low and dry it's barely audible, his face full of mingled love and sadness as he nods.
We were really, really good.
And now tears are spilling down my cheeks. My stomach is wrenched with pain. I'm almost weakening. I could fling open the door, say I've changed my mind. But I can't. I can't just run straight from one guy I don't remember into the arms of another. I have to go, I whisper, turning my head away so I can't see him anymore, rubbing furiously at my eyes. I have to go. I have to go. I pull the heavy door shut, and slowly the taxi pulls away. 21. The world has finally gone mad. This is the proof. As I walk into Langridge's and unwind my bright pink scarf, I have to rub my eyes. It's only the 16th of October and already tinsel is up everywhere. There's a Christmas tree covered in baubles, and a choir is standing on the mezzanine, belting out, "Hark the Herald." Soon they'll be starting the run-up to Christmas on January the 1st, or they'll start having an extra mid-season Christmas. Or it'll just be Christmas the whole time, even in the summer holidays.
Special offer festive Calvin Klein pack, drones a bored-looking girl in white, and I dodge her before I can get sprayed.
Although, on second thoughts, Debs quite likes that perfume. Maybe I'll get it for her. Yes, please, I say, and the girl nearly falls over in surprise.
Festive gift wrap.
She scurries round behind the counter before I can change my mind. Gift wrap, please, I say, but not festive. As she ties up the parcel, I survey myself in the mirror behind her. My hair's still long and glossy, though not quite as bright a shade as before. I'm wearing jeans and a green cardigan, and my feet are comfortable in suede sneakers. My face is bare of makeup. My left hand is bare of a ring. I like what I see. I like my life. Maybe I don't have the dream existence anymore. Maybe I'm not a millionaireess living in penthouse glory overlooking London. But Balham's pretty cool. What's even cooler is my office is on the floor above my flat, so I have the world's shortest commute.
which is maybe why I don't fit into the skinniest of my jeans anymore. That and the 3 slices of toast I have for breakfast every morning. 4 months on, the business has all worked out so well, sometimes I have to pinch myself. The Porsche contract is all happening, and has already had interest from the media. We've done another deal supplying carpet to a restaurant chain, and just today, Fee sold my favourite Della design, an orange circle print, to a trendy spa. That's why I'm here, shopping. I reckon everyone in the team deserves a present. I pay for the perfume, take my bag, and walk on through the store. As I pass a rack of teetering high heels, I'm reminded of Rosalie and can't help smiling. As soon as she heard Eric and I were splitting up, Rosalie announced that she wasn't going to take sides and I was her closest friend and she was going to be my wok, my absolute wok. She's come to visit once. She was an hour late because she claimed her sat-nav didn't go south of the river and then got traumatised by what she said was a street disturbance by yardie gangs. 2 kids messing with each other. They were 8. Still, she's done better than Mum, who's managed to cancel each planned visit with some dog ailment or other. We still haven't talked since I went to see her that day. Not properly. But Amy's kept me posted. Apparently, the day after I visited, without a word to anyone, Mum gathered up a whole load of her frilly clothes and sent them to Oxfam. Then she went to the hairdresser. Apparently she has a bob now, which really suits her, and she's bought some quite modern-looking trousers. She's also got a man in to sort the dry rot, and paid him to take away Dad's paving slabs. I know it doesn't sound very much, but in Mum's world, that's huge strides. And on the completely positive and fantastic front, Amy is doing spectacularly at school. Somehow she's wangled a place on Business Studies A-level, alongside all the 6 formers, and her teacher is bowled over by her progress. She's coming to do work experience with us in the Christmas holidays, and I'm actually looking forward to it. As for Eric, I sigh whenever I think of him. He still thinks we're on a temporary separation, even though I've contacted his lawyer about a divorce. About a week after I moved out, he sent me a typed-out document entitled Lexi and Eric, Separation Manual. He suggested we have what he called a milestone meeting every month, but I haven't made a single one. I just can't see Eric right now. Nor can I bring myself to look at his section entitled Separation Sex, Infidelity, Solo, Reconciliation, Other. Other? What on earth? No, don't even think about it. The point is, there's no point dwelling on the past. There's no point brooding. It's like Fee said, you have to keep looking forward. I'm getting pretty good at that. Most of the time, it's as if the past is a whole other area, sealed off in my head, taped down at the edges. I pause in the accessories department and buy a funky purple patent bag for Fee. Then I head upstairs and find a cool 70s-style T-shirt for Carolyn.
Festive mulled wine.
A guy in a Santa hat offers a tray full of tiny glasses, and I take one. As I wander on, I realise I've got slightly lost in the new layout of this floor and seem to have strayed into menswear. But it doesn't matter. I'm in no hurry. I meander for a few moments, sipping the hot spiced wine, listening to the carols, and watching the fairy lights twinkle. Oh, God, they've got me. I'm starting to feel Christmassy. Okay, this is bad. It's only October. I have to leave before I start buying jumbo packs of mince pies and Bing Crosby CDs and wondering if The Wizard of Oz will be on. I'm just looking for somewhere to put my empty glass down when a bright voice greets me.
Hello again.
It's coming from a woman with a blonde bob who's folding pastel-coloured jumpers in the Ralph Lauren men's department. Hello? I say uncertainly. Do I know you?
Oh, no,
she smiles.
I just remember you from last year.
Last year?
You were in here, buying a shirt for your, chap.
She glances at my hand.
For Christmas. We had quite a long conversation as I gift-wrapped it. I've always remembered it.
I stare back at her, trying to imagine it. Me? Here? Christmas shopping? The old Lexi, probably in a beige business suit, probably in a terrible rush, probably frowning with stress. I'm sorry, I say at length. I've got a terrible memory. What did I say?
Don't worry,
she laughs gaily.
What should you remember? I just remembered it because you were so...
She pauses, mid-jumper fold.
This will seem silly, but you seem so in love.
Right, I nod. Right. I brush back a strand of hair, telling myself to smile and walk away. It's a tiny coincidence, that's all. No big deal. Come on, smile and go. But as I'm standing there with the fairy lights twinkling and the choir singing the first Noel and a strange blonde woman telling me what I did last Christmas, all sorts of buried feelings are emerging, thrusting their way up like steam. The ceiling tape is peeling up at the corner. I can't keep the past in its place any more. This might seem like an odd question. I rub my damp top lip. But did I say what his name was?
No.
The woman eyes me curiously.
You just said he brought you alive. You hadn't been alive before. You were bubbling over with it, with the happiness of it.
She puts the jumper down and eyes me with genuine curiosity.
Don't you remember?
No. Something is clenching at my throat. It was John. John, who I've tried not to think about every single day since I walked away. What did I buy him?
It was this shirt, as I recall.
She hands me a pale green shirt, then turns away to another customer.
Can I help you?
I hold the shirt, trying to picture John in it, myself choosing it for him, trying to conjure up the happiness. Maybe it's the wine. Maybe it's just the end of a long day. But I can't seem to let go of this shirt. I can't put it down.
Could I buy it, please? I say as soon as the woman's free. Don't bother wrapping it.
I don't know what's wrong with me. As I walk out of Langridge's and hail a taxi, I've still got the green shirt, clasped to my face like a comfort blanket. My whole head is buzzing. The world is receding, like I'm getting the flu or something. A taxi draws up and I get in, on autopilot.
Where to?
Asks the driver, but I barely hear him. I can't stop thinking about John. My head's buzzing harder. I'm clutching the shirt. I'm humming. I don't know what my head is doing. I'm humming a tune I don't know. And all I know is it's John. This tune is John. It means John. It's a tune I know from him. I close my eyes desperately, chasing it, trying to flag it down. And then, like a flash of light, it's in my head. It's a memory. I have a memory of him, me, the two of us together. The smell of salt in the air, his chin scratchy, the grey jumper, and the tune. That's it. A fleeting moment, nothing else. But I have it.
I have it.
Love, where to?
The driver has turned round and opened the petition. I stare at him as though he's talking a foreign language. I can't let anything else into my mind. I have to keep hold of this memory. I have to cherish it.
For Christ's sake,
he rolls his eyes.
Where do you want to go?
There's only one place I can go. I have to go.
To
Hammersmith.
He turns round, puts the taxi in gear, and we roar off. As the taxi moves through London, I sit bolt upright, tensed up, clutching onto the straps. I feel as though my head contains a precious liquid, and if it's jolted, it'll be spilled. I can't think about it, or I'll wear it out. I can't talk, or look out of the window, or let anything into my brain at all. I have to keep this memory intact. I have to tell him. As we arrive in John's Road, I thrust some money at the driver and get out, immediately realising I should have called first. I whip out my mobile and dial his number. If he's not here, I'll go to wherever he is.
Lexi?
He answers the phone. I'm here, I gasp. I remembered. There's silence. The phone goes dead and I can hear swift footsteps inside. The next minute, the front door swings open at the top of the steps, and there he is, in a polo neck and jeans, old Converse sneakers on his feet.
I remembered something,
I blurt out before he can say anything.
I remembered a tune. I don't know it, but I know I heard it with you, at the beach. We must have been there one time. But listen.
I start humming the tune, avid with hope.
Do you remember?
Lexi.
He pushes his hands through his hair.
What are you talking about? Why are you carrying a shirt?
He focuses on it again.
Is that mine?
I heard it with you at the beach. I know I did.
I know I'm babbling incoherently, but I can't help it.
I can remember the salty air, and your chin was scratchy, and it went like this.
I start humming again. But I know I'm getting more inaccurate, scrabbling for the right notes. At last I give up and stop expectantly. John's face is screwed up, perplexed.
I don't remember.
He says,
You don't remember?
I stare at him in outraged disbelief.
You don't remember? Come on, think back. It was cold, but we were warm somehow, and you hadn't shaved. You had a grey jumper on.
Suddenly his face changes.
Oh, God. The time we went to Whitstable. Is that what you're remembering?
I don't know, I say helplessly. Maybe.
We went to Whitstable for the day.
He's nodding.
To the beach. It was fucking freezing, so we wrapped up and we had a radio with us. Hum the tune again?
Okay, I should never have mentioned the tune. I'm such a crap singer. Mortified, I start humming it again.
God knows what I'm singing now. Wait, is it that song that was everywhere? Bad Day?
He starts humming, and it's like a dream coming to life.
Yes, I say eagerly. That's it. That's the tune.
There's a long pause, and John rubs his face. Looking bemused.
So that's all you remember? A tune?
When he says it like that, it makes me feel utterly stupid for dashing across London, and all of a sudden, cold reality is crashing into my bubble. He's not interested anymore. He's moved on. He's probably got a girlfriend by now.
Yes.
I clear my throat. Trying unsuccessfully to seem nonchalant.
That's all. I just thought I'd let you know that I'd remembered something, just out of interest. So, anyway, nice to see you. Bye.
I pick up my shopping bags with clumsy hands. My cheeks are flaming miserably as I turn to leave. This is so embarrassing. I need to get out of here as quick as I can. I don't know what I was thinking.
Is it enough?
John's voice takes me by surprise. I swivel to see he's come halfway down the steps, his face taut with hope. And at the sight of him, all my pretense falls away. The last 3 months seem to fall away. It's just us again.
I don't know, I manage at last.
Is it?
It's your call. You said you needed a memory, a thread linking us to us.
He takes another step down towards me.
Now you have one.
If I do, it's the thinnest thread in the world. One tune. I make a sound that was supposed to be a laugh. It's like cobweb, gossamer thin.
Well then, hold on to it.
His dark eyes never leaving mine, he's coming down the rest of the steps, breaking into a run.
Hold on, Lexi. Don't let it snap.
He reaches me and wraps me tightly in his arms. I won't, I whisper and grab onto him. I don't ever want to let him go again. Out of my arms, out of my head. When at last I resurface, three children are staring at me from the next door steps.
Ew,
says one.
Sexy.
I can't help laughing, even though my eyes are shiny with tears.
Yeah, I agree, nodding at John. Sexy. Sexy.
He nods back at me, his hands spanning my waist, his thumbs gently caressing my hip bones like they belong there. Hey, John. I clap my hand over my mouth as though in sudden inspiration. Guess what? I suddenly remember something else.
What?
His face lights up.
What do you remember?
I remember going into your house, taking the phones off the hooks, and having the best sex of my life for 24 hours solid, I say seriously. I even remember the exact date.
Really?
John smiles, but looks a bit puzzled.
When?
October the 16th, 2007, at about, I consult my watch, 4:57 p.m.
Ah.
John's face clicks an understanding.
Of course. Yes, I remember that too. It was a pretty awesome time, wasn't it?
He runs a finger down my back, and I feel a delicious shiver of anticipation.
Only I think it was 48 hours solid, not 24.
Oh, you're right. I click my tongue in mock reproof. How could I have forgotten?
Come on.
John leads me up the stairs, his hand firm in mine, to the cheers and jeers of the children. By the way, I say as he kicks the door shut behind us, I haven't had good sex since 2004, just so you know. John laughs. He peels off his polo neck in one movement, and I feel a bolt of instant lust.
My body remembers this, even if I don't. I'll accept that challenge.
He comes over, takes my face in his two hands, and just surveys me for a moment, silent and purposeful until my insides are melting with want.
So, remind me, what happened after the 48 hours were over? I can't hold out any more.
I have to pull his face down to me for a kiss. And this one I'll never forget. This one I'll keep forever. I'll tell you, I murmur at last, my mouth against John's hot, smooth skin. I'll tell you when I remember.
The end. You have been listening to Remember Me, by Sophie Kinsella, narrated by Rachel Bavage. If you have enjoyed this recording and would like to receive information on the latest titles, please contact us at the address on the cover. We will be pleased to send you a catalogue of available titles.